X, 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 and a dot, dot, dot. You know I never thought I'd go and get the chills. That memory, that's useful as a payphone, that street as a metronome, but I guess it led me here. And here's a good place to be as anywhere. Take care for your nightmares. I hear that I'm dreaming it all. So I'll buckle up.
Curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, feminism, and activism? Tune in to Rabble Radio on CJSF 90.1 FM to hear the latest news and stories that matter to you. Rabble Radio is the flagship podcast of Rabble.ca.
Talk to me about your work that you had done at Two Spirits of the First Nations Toronto.
Yeah, that was a great experience. I think an elder that I had been working with in my youth actually sent me like their job posting and was like, "You need to do it for this." It was actually like a couple months right after I had dropped out of university, so I was kind of again in this kind of, what am I doing? You know, what's happening? Kind of situation. So the position was an Oshkabeois position, which just means helper in Anishinaabe Mohan. So I was basically like an assistant to the program coordinator at the time. From that role, I kind of evolved to different roles, but I kind of stayed with the agency for just about 2 years. It was a super great experience. Again, I was like 19 when I started there and worked there till about like 21. And I was definitely like the youngest one there by quite a bit. I think that really just shows like what their kind of ethics are. And I think it was a really great opportunity that despite my age and, you know, I didn't have as much experience as maybe other people there, but I think I brought a different younger perspective, and I think they really valued that, and I really appreciated that. I think that's very in alignment with, you know, true Indigenous customs of having of you know, inviting and listening to like all voices at the table for what they're all worth, and that, you know, there's no one kind of, that hierarchy isn't as potent. I worked a lot in like programming, so doing programming for the like Two-Spirit Indigenous community of Toronto, and then I worked in some harm reduction as well. So again, like going out just kind of on the street and connecting with Indigenous and Two-Spirit homeless folks in like kind of the downtown core. And yeah, again, I think I was so blessed to be working somewhere where I'm also like actively learning more about myself and my culture, my mm-hmm. gender, sexuality. Like it was a very like just open workspace in terms of those things. And it just was again, like very supportive, because I think everyone there kind of just had their own like story, you know, and like really didn't shy away from maybe more like taboo subject matter, if that makes sense, where it was just very like, you could just kind of really speak your mind and like, you know, get the help you deserved. And yeah, I felt really kind of just, I felt really honored and proud to work there and know that I was kind of really grateful to be part of this like larger movement towards, you know, helping and supporting Indigenous folks in a more holistic way, like really looking at, you know, mind, body, spirit, like what's affecting them physically, what's, you know, affecting them mental, you know, their mental health, very trauma-informed care as well, with like a harm reduction lens. So it's all things that I personally like already really believed in. So it just felt really good to be like empowered through my work in that regard. And yeah, I got like a lot of really amazing opportunities. Like Caitlin mentioned, like speaking at a Bored Genius concert was like absolutely crazy.
And I was gonna add, and so that awesome. It really adds to how having a younger perspective was very valuable in that moment, because if it wasn't for you working in that building, they would not know who, what that band is, how popular they were.
It was literally like, so funny.
I remember like their management called Two Spirits, and Tegan was the only one in that building that knew who Boy Genius was and knew who Phoebe Bridgers was. And so I guess thanks to Tegan for getting us that gig.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazarowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Many high school students spend time after school writing papers, singing in a choir, or playing baseball. But Nathan Tan, a junior at St. Mark's School of Texas in Dallas, devotes much of his time to environmental causes, like advocating for clean air and restoring wildlife habitat.
We, as young people, really need to take a stand, and I think it's very important that we take that action and continue inspiring people that are many generations older than us.
Last year, Tan founded the Shared Skies Initiative, a nonprofit that's monitoring air pollution in parts of Dallas. Many neighborhoods near factories or highways are heavily polluted, so the nonprofit is installing air quality sensors to collect data that can be used to advocate for change. Tan also works with his school's prairie restoration crew, which plants native wildflowers and grasses to help rebuild patches of the original prairie ecosystem, much of which has been lost to sprawl and farming. He encourages young people who are worried about the environment to spend some time reading news about people implementing solutions.
Understanding that there is progress being made across the entire world can be really inspiring.
And he urges young people to pick an issue they care about and start taking small steps. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
This is Bird Note. In Mexico City, 73-year-old Katia Latouf started a hummingbird hospital in her apartment.
I have now here almost six species. I have a small one like a bee, makes it doesn't fly like a hummingbird. It's a Mexican.
The bumblebee hummingbird.
Yeah.
Either flying across a bedroom to a large window or resting over the dry tree branches Katia carefully placed on the corners, there are more hummingbirds than most people have ever seen together.
Now I have 82, expecting one more.
Katia says people bring her mostly injured baby birds. Larger animals attack them while they're vulnerable in their nests.
People find them, compassionate people, and they bring them to me.
So how did Katia, who once ran a French high fashion boutique, start caring for injured hummingbirds? It began in 2012, after she survived cancer that was considered terminal. She received her first injured hummingbird and named him Gucci.
Sometimes he was here and I was depressed. He stay on my shoulder, on my head. No, Gucci, I don't want to play now. Please leave me alone. And he used to stay in front of me, looking at me, like saying, pay attention to me. I didn't understand at the time until he dies 9 months later. And it was a new life written to me, because 9 months is the symbol of a new life. When you have a baby, it's 9 months.
Katia has tried giving a new life to each one of the hundreds of babies she's received ever since. For Bird Note, I'm Lucina Melesio.
Let's talk about your writing. How did you get into writing? I remember this is also at the time we were in high school, where I saw you kind of blossom into like this writer. And I remember you know, seeing you, you know, we both were in, I think it was Canadian literature class,
And you really, I remember seeing you like flourish in that class and sort of the mentors and the teachers that we had at that time kind of like watering the plant that was like your creativity and like seeing how that blossomed into your adulthood. But I really want to see like that progression in your own words. So how did you get into writing exactly?
Yeah, I think again, actually, even in childhood, I remember my mom is, I think she's a writer. She has like always kept journals. And I just remember my entire childhood, you know, we'd be at the park, we'd be like at our community swimming pool, anywhere. And she would always have a journal and she would always be writing. And I think, so I just grew up seeing that as like, I don't know, I guess it was just in my world. And she always really valued, writing personally. And then she also like really instilled in all of us, my brothers, like a love for reading. And that was really important to her. You know, she would take time to read us stories all the time. And like, that was a really beautiful, like aspect of my childhood that I really appreciate now. Cause I just got like a taste for it. I developed appreciation for it. So I think it was always important to me in some respect, but I definitely remember, like, I would probably say around 14, like middle school age. I think just through school, kind of, you know, writing essays for the first time and doing like poetry units and stuff and being like, oh, this is like actually a really nice way to express myself. It was kind of funny though, cause like as a child, I like have a learning disability. I still have it. But as a child in our education system, like I definitely struggled to some degree with English. Like I loved it, but it was also kind of, I had different struggles with it. Like in terms of like my dyslexia. So I'm also super blessed and grateful that I had a school that could offer me a lot of support and could like clue in early on that I had a learning disability. And I think without that kind of immediate care, I don't think I would have like, I don't think English would have been something I actually like grew to love. I think it would have still been like a big frustrating thing for me. So I'm really, really grateful looking back on that, that I was actually in a school that like fostered, you know, really like high quality education. So yeah, I feel like around 14, I started doing it more just for myself, like writing poetry and short stories. And then, yeah, when I got into high school, I applied for the arts high school that we went to in Toronto. And I kind of went more on like a visual arts vibe when I kind of first started. But then as I was there, and again, I'm so grateful that our art school, you didn't have to choose one thing. You could go into a bunch of different arts classes and stuff. So what kind of started out as a visual arts angle really switched into theater, and then from theater really progressed into creative writing as like a huge thing I was interested in. And yeah, I think the teachers that we had were so pivotal to me. And I think they, you know, like saw my passion for it and really definitely like supported me in that and like challenged me and really like grew me as a writer. I'm so grateful for that. And like, yeah, so then through high school, I definitely just kept writing so much poetry and more short stories. And then I wrote two plays in high school. And yeah, writing became something like super kind of sacred to me, honestly, and helped me through a lot of the things that I was navigating as a youth. I had, you know, my fair share of mental health ups and downs. And I think having writing was so important to me. And I think if I didn't have it again, I would be a very different person. And I think I would have struggled a lot more without it. Just the ability to feel like seen and expressed was so vital to me as a teenager. And that really, yeah, came down a lot to poetry, I think, was really the thing I fell in love with. And then kind of after high school, I kind of began posting my poetry on TikTok and garnered a fair amount of attention there, which was a really cool experience as well, just kind of being like seen for that. I mean, there was like, there's like negative and positives obviously to our social media day and age, but generally speaking, I'm really glad I did, because I think it again like inspired me in a different way and just brought me again with that kind of like, I think it also made me a better writer in a lot of ways, and just having that kind of just a lot of practice. And then my most recent writing experience was writing two trail guides for Friends of Killarney Park and Killarney Provincial Park, which trail guides are kind of a short booklet that you would bring with you when hiking the trails, and they explain the like ecological aspects of the land you're on. They explain the history. It kind of delved into mine. I did a lot about also just like environmentalism, and I brought like an art kind of lens into it. Killarney Provincial Park was famously painted by the Group of Seven. So I talked a lot about that, how nature can be so inspiring for art, and how if not for artists, Killarney was going to be like completely logged. So I don't know, this interesting relationship between art and nature, which I think is just always exists and it's very intertwined. But that was such a wonderful experience, and I got to like live there and, you know, met so many amazing people there. And I'm so grateful I got to publish two books there. So
I really, yeah, I was very amazed by that work you did at Killarney and how you were in charge of sort of giving like this literary context as to such like a journey through nature. And I feel like that kind of connects to the piece that you're showcasing with us today, this sort of journey through the transitions of like adulthood and specifically womanhood and under like the human condition. Is there anything that you want to say about the poem you brought to us today?
I feel like this poem, yeah, definitely. I was inspired by the transition from girlhood to womanhood and how fragile that transition is. I think in our like patriarchal society, I feel like there's so much pressure on girls to become women so quickly. And I think it's just interesting, you know, like a girl will start her period and immediately it's like, you're a woman now, you're different in some regard, you have to carry yourself differently, you're not a little girl anymore. And there's like immediately that pressure when, you know, girls get their period when they're like 10, like that is still a girl, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like when boys begin puberty and they're even more at 13, 14, 15, I don't think I've ever heard the same level of pressures applied to young men who are starting puberty, boys who are starting puberty, of like, okay, you're an adult man now. This is what it means to be an adult man. Here's like the responsibilities, of what you're applicable for. And so even just that was interesting to me. And yeah, just how fragile girlhood is in that way and how quickly it can be taken from a girl. So I think in my case, this poem was very, literal. I was, momentarily panicked at the thought of pregnancy and motherhood. And I was kind of just very much in real time realizing in the face of this huge life, change, how much of a child I still was. I think I wrote when I was 19. So it was kind of, you know, this poem, I definitely came out of me as a way to encapsulate that fear of like looking motherhood in the eyes as a young woman. And not only what motherhood, not only the literal definition of motherhood, but what it means to be a mother in our society, you know, like the judgment of being a mother, but also being a young mother, the isolation that comes with being a mother, the like complete metamorphosis of your mind and body. And I was just like terrified of it. So this poem very much came out of that. And I also posted this poem on TikTok and received like a lot of really beautiful you know, comments from women who resonated with this to some degree, who definitely resonated with this. I also received a lot of comments from men who were like, if you're not ready to be a mother, then you shouldn't be doing all that. And, you know, very much just kind of, just blaming women. Yeah, anyway, so I think this poem just stuck out to me for this specific episode of transition, in the way of that transition from girlhood to womanhood, and the pressure of that in our society, kind of forced adulthood that a lot of young girls feel.
If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Thank you.
all that being said, let's now listen to the collaboration we did on your piece, A Girl Held Together by Bubblegum, Anger, and a Large Slurpee by Tegan Smallwood. I bought a pregnancy test, sour candy, and a large Slurpee because I am a kid too. And as that 3-minute timer ticked away, fear looked over my shoulder, fear giggled at me, giggled at my stupidity, at my childish demeanor, and I was horrified. At the thought of two little lines, let me be clear, my dear, I was not scared of you. I was scared of myself. Because I am not a mother. I am a girl playing dress up in my mom's closet. I cannot take care of you yet. That does not mean I don't love you, love the thought of you, but you deserve better than what I am right now. You deserve a whole mother. And right now I could only be a mother and a girl held together by bubblegum anger and a large Slurpee. Look at the stick. You are only one line. You do not exist yet. I am a girl again.
Welcome back to Speak Up. That was episode 1 of Nook Me, which you can find that episode and all of the episodes of Nook Me at cjsf.ca/content/Manookme, or you can go to CJSF SoundCloud and listen to the whole thing there. Thanks for hanging out with me this hour. I'm Jesse. This is Speak Up. Democracy Now! Is up next. We got a whole bunch of great programming coming up over the rest of the day, so stick around here on CJSF and leave with a little bit of new music from Chopping Spree. This is Wish. See you next time. Bit of problems, big feelings. Blow out your candles, little rat. Oh, when the water starts to rot. After the visions and my thoughts. Yep. Cause in the colorful eclair, cast yourself to troubled waters, revitalize apocalypse. You've been sad from the beginning. Learn the ways to fix the spell. Alright, 7 billion people waiting line for the end. Then might as well give it to them.